Welcome back to another State of the E-commerce Industry Report. I am here with the provisioners of the incredible data that we look at to try to make sense of the macro environment in which we all are doing business. I'm joined, as always, by Jeremiah, the CEO and founder of KnoCommerce, Yarden, CEO, founder of Veros, and Steve Recook, who is today in his vest. That means he means business. He is senior data analyst here at Common Thread Collective. Gentlemen, good to have you back. Anything new going on in your worlds that you want to share right off the bat, or should we just jump right into the data? Jeremiah, how are you feeling about the Nuggets so far? It's been rougher. You've gotten real quiet on Twitter.
Yeah, I still have hope they can come back, to be clear. I've seen them come back from being down 3-1 in two series in the same playoff run. So you never know. But anyway, it's good to see you all. Happy to kind of dive in.
I'm hoping that Jeremiah's illogical connection to his love for the Nuggets doesn't undermine his data authority, but we are excited to dive in. Today, we have some exciting stuff because each month when we get together, it's fun to open the spreadsheet, see everybody's data, and start to begin to construct the narrative based on what we're seeing. And we all obviously walk in with our sort of experiential anecdotes, what we've been hearing in the market, what we've seen. And there's been a lot of news, actually, maybe not the sort of travesty that was the alleged Meta issues in the previous periods, but we just watched Shopify stock get crushed, Meta stock get crushed. There's a lot of suspicion about the future in our space. And so we're excited to discuss that today. And one of the things that we wanted to start with was we wanted to always explore the share of wallet data that we see for media spend, as well as the overall performance of brands in our space. And for that, we use Veros data. So Yarden, why don't you first remind us again, who is Veros? What is the data you're sitting on? And then let's dive a little bit into first, if you could tell us about overall store performance in the Shopify ecosystem, and then let's get into the share of wallet conversation.
Sure. Yeah. So basically Veros is a platform that brands use to benchmark their digital marketing and, you know, revenue performance against other brands in their category and understand real-time market trends. So we have 6,000 brands using Veros, about $6 billion of ad spend annually and $20 billion of revenue. This is all anonymized, aggregated first-party data. So it's very clean. And then going into April's performance, revenue still putting up big numbers. Interesting trend is 8- and 9-figure brands accelerated in April. So last month, they were up 18% year over year. And in April, they were up 20% year over year. Again, same trend that most of that growth is coming from repeat revenue. So 43% growth on the repeat revenue side and 9% growth on the new revenue side. Or 7-figure brands decelerated a bit, going from mid-40s last month to up 27% this month, also mainly from repeat revenue, but a little less of it. It's a little less significant in the magnitude of it. And then from an ad performance side of things, again, similar trends. I mean, Meta spend decelerated a bit, but still up 17% year over year, but definitely down from, you know, the Q1 trends that we see, and CPM and ROAS relatively flat. ROAS is up a bit. Google, for the first time search in a while, had spend increase actually, and ROAS is down a bit. And TikTok had a great month in terms of year over year ROAS percentage. That's also partially because April was just an abysmal month. April 2023 was an abysmal month last year for TikTok. So for April 2024, the year over year data is nearly double the ROAS of what they were seeing a year before.
So a lot there. We're going to dive in to break it all down. First, let's talk about the revenue growth for stores. So you mentioned that we are seeing strong growth, specifically coming out of the larger stores. And one of the things that happened this week was Shopify released their earnings in Q1. Their stock got pummeled because investors didn't like the guidance that they gave around future earnings. But it was around, I believe the number that they gave for Q2, let me make sure that I'm referencing it, was low to mid 20% range in Q2. So that maps pretty consistently with what we're seeing on your side as well, right?
Yeah. 27 to 28% for 7-figure and 8- and 9-figures.
So while the market may not like that from a high growth standpoint, what I see and what I feel is that we are seeing a consistent pattern of stability, almost 20-ish% growth 4 stores. And we've seen this now for a couple of months in a row where we're in this range. 8-figure stores were a little lower than that, but this is a really solid month. And so maybe there's just this sort of like level setting relative to the expectation of what this environment and consumer product is going to yield for us going forward. How do you feel about what we've seen on the trend for growth in the industry, and how confident do you feel about it going forward?
Yeah, I think that that's a good way to look at it. I'm curious, maybe the Shopify team is seeing a similar trend on the repeat purchase side, and they're forecasting that that is going to catch up at some point and then cause the overall revenue to start decelerating past that, you know, 20, 30, 40% year-over-year growth. So I think that's the one, like the question is, are they, you know, is 25% the new normal, or is 25% this like synthetic number that in reality, you know, the numbers underlying it for new customer growth is going to start going down and down and down. I think that's the big question we're worrying about.
So maybe, Steve, we're going to jump to you. We were going to do this in a different order, but I think this is an important setup where we have seen this pattern where if we look at growth between new versus returning customers, we are seeing stronger growth out of returning customer volume than new customer volume. And this tends to be, we've used the phrase before, canary in the coal mine, to a little bit of a concern about the future, that if new customer growth doesn't maintain pace, then eventually that's sort of a leading indicator to what will be a lag in returning customer revenue. But what are you seeing on the new customer acquisition efficiency and new customer growth front on our data?
Yeah. So what I looked at actually was the percentage of Meta reported revenue. That is, like, if you take Meta and that the revenue they're getting attribute on 7-day, and then look at that as a percentage of new customer revenue. Obviously, you want to, the majority of brands and basically all brands are trying to use Meta to drive new customer growth. So you would hope that as you're increasing reported revenue from Meta, that you would also be proportionally increasing the new customer revenue. Should go hand in hand. What we actually saw was, since the introduction of Advantage Plus in August of 2022, we've actually seen an increase of Meta reported revenue faster than new customer growth. So Meta's was grabbing a larger share, either grabbing a larger share of new customer revenue. You're grabbing more organic, you know, customers that would have converted organically, or you're grabbing more repeat customers that were going to come back anyway, but Meta's just taking credit for them now. And I think it's probably more that latter.
So this is such a important graphic for people to really, I think, linger on when they get this month's edition, is to look at this, to look at how much revenue Meta's reporting versus the trend of new customer revenue growth. And if we think about the structural setup of ASC, this is really important, is that historically, the way that you would think about exclusions in your campaign would be there was an opportunity to add the audience that you wanted to target, and then an opportunity to add the audience that you exclusively didn't want to target. And you could build everything from website visitors to lists of customers for different period to engaged viewers to all sorts of different exclusions that people would try and layer on there to really ruthlessly exclude existing customers. And now that happens where Meta says, okay, at the account level, what is you want to list as your audience exclusion? And then on ASC, you get to toggle to a percentage of the spend that you want on new versus returning customers. So people will, one, I think there's sort of this ambiguity of like, what should I set this at? Should it be 5? Should it be 10? Should it be 20? And Meta will give guidance of, you know, do it at 10 to 15%. So just in that one change, they went from hard excluding all existing customers to introducing a percentage back in. And then there's this little insidious feature where they tell you that the 10% relates to the budget that you set. So let's say you set a $10,000 daily budget and you say 10%. That means they can spend up to $1,000 on returning customers. But if you're running cost controls, as an example, and the budget only spends $2,000 that day, $1,000 of it could still be spent on returning customer revenue, which really means 50% of your daily budget is now under those returning customers. So there's these little mechanics by which, especially on a 7-day click, 1-day view, there's an incentive for Meta to put their ads in front of the customers that they know are most likely to repurchase, which is in many cases the existing customers. And so we're seeing this like fracture between a real consistent relationship between new customer acquisition and meta at revenue. And now those things are starting to bifurcate a little bit.
That's right. And that's also why I think we've seen a drop in efficiency, a lower AMER year over year consistently. And it looks like that trend has kind of reversed a little bit since February. We're finally seeing a little bit more a drop in meta attributed revenue, drop in that with respect to new customers. And at the same time, we're seeing an increase in acquisition marketing efficiency ratio, AMER.
Yeah. And because this is our data set, I can say that internally at CTC, there's like a movement away from ASC because of this. There's a growing contingent that's interested in BAU because of this lack of battling over their returning customer revenue. And so more and more, our media buyers in particular are pressing and pushing to move out of ASC structures because of this conflict. And also, we've seen a lot of incrementality tests through partners like House and Measured that we work with customers, where oftentimes ASC is not as incremental as BAU in some cases. And again, I'm not ready to say that this is like a large data set that we've analyzed in some detail, but I know that there is a narrative movement away of this. And a lot of it has to do with, so often we're trying to drive AMER, new customer revenue, and there's a challenge in that process.
That's right.
So with this though, the other corresponding really interesting item though, is that the meta marketing machine is doing a great job of getting adoption of ASC. So when we look at the share of wallet, the corresponding problem here is that ASC utilization generally, not inside of CTC as I'm referencing in the last few weeks, but over the last year is growing and it is really doing a great job of capturing some demand. So Yarden, this sets up our next conversation, which is about advertising share of wallet and some of the big industry changes that are sort of happening underneath our feet. So why don't you give us a little bit of the view into April's share of wallet and then some of the trends that we've been seeing over the last year as it relates to both Advantage Plus and PMax and then Meta and Google generally.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, for this issue, I mean, we built a bunch of share wallet views to analyze all this within Vero. So there's a few different things going on. So first of all, from a high level, I mean, Meta in 2024 has been really growing share wallet as related to what it has spent compared to Google and to TikTok. Just to put some numbers around that, I mean, TikTok is constantly hovering around 4 or 5%. And then Google, if we take, you know, PMax and non-PMax together, is around between, you know, 15 to 20% usually. And then, you know, Meta takes the rest. So, you know, nearly, you know, 75 to 80% of shared wallet. So they are the behemoth here for sure. You know, that's something that we're seeing is a trend that continues to grow, but we did want to take a layer deeper in terms of what is going on. You know, both Google and Meta, they're pushing as much as they can, PMax and Advantage Plus. And so what is the adoption there? So the interesting thing about the adoption is as a percent of the total spend that's going on from each platform. So Meta spend and then Advantage Plus within Meta spend and Google spend and PMax within that, they both hover around a third of the spend. And, you know, Meta Advantage Plus since the start of the year has been growing, you know, from 32 to 36%, you know, which we're looking at a lot of spend. So it is significant. And Google in that time has come down from that same 36 mark down to 33, 34, but they're generally similar. The most interesting thing that's going on is, I'd say a couple of things. For around a year now, or half a year, they haven't been able to scale past that third. So we're not seeing it get near that, you know, 50% mark or more in terms of adoption in e-commerce. And the other thing is that what we're seeing is in PMax, it's basically advertisers are taking their current spend that they have in Google and putting a portion in PMax. So Google as a whole is, you know, somewhat stable in terms of share wallet. It's down, but that's because Meta spend is up. But it's really that PMax is taking share from search and from the other main Google channels, where in Meta, it's not the story. In Meta, Advantage Plus spend is growing. So they're, you know, at nearly 34, 35%. of Meta spend, but Meta Non-Advantage Plus is also growing, and that is constantly taking share of wallet in 2024. So Meta's been able to figure out a way to scale both of those, where Google, it's basically holding that same pie and, you know, eating into it with the PMax spend.
So I think that this is like, we need, people need to anchor in this. And I think if you are, especially I would say if you are the finance crowd, maybe the investment crowd, I think this is like one of the bigger stories underlying the ad ecosystem in our world right now, is that if you look at the net change, okay, meaning the amount of delta between Facebook's gain and Google's loss of share of wallet between May of 23 and May of 24, you're talking about an almost 20% change in Meta's favor. And almost all of that is coming out of Google, which is the really the only other subsequent player in the space, like TikTok and Pinterest and YouTube. They're all tiny players as it relates to the share of wallet. And it's happening because the one ad product of all of these that's gaining share of wallet significantly is Advantage Plus inside of Meta. Like if you look at the trend line for Meta Non-Advantage Plus, it's basically flat. You look at Google PMax, its share of wallet is basically flat. But what's happening is Google Non-PMax is declining and Meta Advantage Plus is growing. And so Meta is capturing more. Like in May, if you just look at the comparison against Google, Meta, and TikTok, just those three, like Google's up over 80, or Meta's up over 80% of share of wallet. That's like an exorbitant amount. And so I think this is really, and this matches, I have a bunch of tweets, like I went back and looked, because I this is a thing I've been seeing on our customer side for a long time. April 8th, all the data I'm seeing is that Google is losing share of wallet. PMax is a disaster for them. April 9th, a couple of Google spend decline data references. This is from Veros, from Northbeam. There's a bunch of places where it is clear to me that our customers and the people using these products, they're being pushed to PMax. So PMax is becoming more of the ad account, but people don't know what to do with it. And that the incrementality results that I'm seeing for them are not good. And this has really become a problematic issue for people wanting to allocate more dollars into Google. And so they're moving away from it. And opportunistically, Meta's Advantage Plus is grabbing and displaying more impact because, again, it's pulling the returning customer revenues. ROAS is looking good. They're selling this. ROAS, like the big study that Meta went out with is that across all our brands, ASC has a better ROAS than BAU. And it's like, okay, that's a great marketing statement, but we're saying it might not actually be in the best interest of people. So really fascinating shifts in the share of wallet right now. And Google's got to figure out the marketing relationship and product clarity as it relates to PMax.
One interesting point too. So this is on the self-reported attribution side of things. We look at a bunch of different trends. So the question, how did you first hear about us, was answered about 16 million times on our platform last year. And so we have a bunch of different data that we look at. This does not necessarily indicate the impact of paid, but what is really interesting, because it's kind of hard to distinguish paid versus organic oftentimes, but we actually see in terms of people self-reporting that they discovered a brand on Google, we actually saw a significant rise last year as all of this was rolling out. So I'm looking at the numbers here. Q1, around 6% of, if you kind of dive down to paid channels, so excluding organic, like word of mouth and some of those things. And Google drove about 6.5-7% of impact in Q1. And by Q3 and Q4, it was about 9.5%. So it's a pretty massive increase in the number of people reporting that they're finding brands on Google. And another thing that's interesting is we look at the time to purchase. And so that's another question that we ask is, how long did you know about this product or know about our brand before purchasing? And Google is one that happens very quickly. So I wouldn't necessarily expect a time delay on that to have as the same sort of impact that it could on something like a TikTok or a YouTube. But I do think that's really interesting data. I don't know what that means if people are pulling out of the paid ad side honestly, the real impact of Google is organic search. I think that's where Google is so powerful. And so I don't know that necessarily says much about the paid environment, but it is interesting to see it's driving a lot of impact. Perhaps it's just on the organic side, but there's something happening here where the total impact of Google driving discovery is a bit mismatched with, at least on the self-report side, a bit mismatched with what we're seeing from the ad spend side of things.
Yeah, I do think also it's worth noting, like, I think we forget a lot that, like, when we hear things in social media and people going back and forth, it's not 50-50 Meta Google, and TikTok does not have a huge chart. I mean, TikTok is right now sub 5% of what we're seeing. YouTube is 1%. Okay. PMax is small. I mean, so PMax is, let's say, a third of Google's 15, 5%, right? Like, these are all small things. And the trend is actually going the opposite way. Like, the trend is going more towards Meta in 2024, where people are going more towards what they know. So I think we need to remember that, like, it's probably too much time is spent on these tiny channels, and they're not necessarily, we would have thought that they're like scaling like crazy. And yeah, Advantage Plus is scaling, sure, but so is Meta, and it's really kind of like between the two, and the other are really small fish. And that's not to say that money can't be made there and it can't be efficient. It definitely could, but I think we need to always remind ourselves of the scale of these things by the numbers.
Yeah. And this is why I think this behavioral data is so much more important to anchor yourself to than what are people talking about on the podcasts. Like, this morning I was listening to a podcast with a brand that's awesome, and they were talking about this like internal initiative to move away from Meta and diversify. And this is like a very common swan song. Like, you hear everybody talk about this as if it was happening broadly. Like, you, the way you hear these narratives, you would assume that these percentages were moving the opposite direction, but it is not. And it is really important to like take the things people are telling you publicly and then go look at the data and realize that the share of wallet is moving towards Meta. And there are all sorts of reasons why, but like, that is the actual behavioral trend, is that even the behemoth is continuing to capture more of the present share of wallet.
Yeah.
So whether that poses consolidation risk or not for brands, I think is an interesting conversation, and one that I get why people would discuss it. But the reality is that like, it's just a matter of the functional benefit or the financial benefit of moving the dollar somewhere else. You can't diversify for the sake of a loss. Like, it's not possible in an era where capital is not available. And so I think it's really important. I think this is what we want to do in the DDCCI, is to say like, hey, I know people think I like work for Meta or something, but I actually am agnostic to the platforms. I don't care. I just want to tell you though, that this is where people are spending their money. That is just the reality of it.
What, one point on that though, if ASC is doing what we think it's doing, which is spending more on returning customers, the one caveat I would say there is in some regards then, and maybe it just comes down to knowing how to manage it better, but it's kind of just a tax on your returning customers. I mean, and not to say like email and SMS and all those are kind of that way as well, right? Like, you're basically, you have to pay something in order to reactivate these people. And so it's, or to activate these purchases. So I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing. That's just kind of part of the journey. But I do wonder how much of, like, to your point, more ad spend is going to the platform. But if at the end of the day, the ad spend is just becoming less efficient for you over time, then it does make sense that why some brands would be looking at diversification.
Yeah, and I think it is important to make sure that really what you're talking about is incrementality, a buzzword that everyone's super into these days, because you can have an incremental purchase from an existing customer. Like, that still is possible to generate, right? Just because they were an existing customer doesn't mean that they were automatically already going to come back through some other medium. But it is important to ensure that you are protecting against that. And I think view conversions are a big piece of this story. Like, there's all sorts of parts of it that contribute. But yeah, people have to be clear with the utilization of the product. But to me, what happens is that at the end of the day, what governs all of this is actually like dollars in your bank account. And people, this is like, I think, set aside all of the attribution layer of the entire universe and just say that if people didn't have more money to spend, money would move away from the things, right? Like, it's just, there are no dollars to spend if dollars aren't being generated. And so what I tend to believe is that if you want the greatest attribution signal in the world, I actually think share of wallet is it tells you where the money gets made. And that if you follow that indication, you will find where people who have to make money spend money. And that is the sort of end result of that reality.
Right. I will, but Taylor, to push on that though, I think that there is a, like, there can be phases where the money is the money comes in more actually when you bring in repeat customers. And then at some point it turns on you, right? If Veros fired all its employees tomorrow, we would get a lot more money in our bank account. But at some point the thing would stop working and then no one would pay us anymore, right? Like, so there is that. And at some point it hits.
That's not what we're saying. That what you just described is the wrong metaphor. That was cost cutting. This is revenue. The question is just revenue from who? And I think it's important, like new customer revenue is up 9% year over year.
Right.
It's not down. Now returning customer revenue is up more. Now, one of the questions I have, and this is like, there's a maturity cycle question here, which is as brands get a larger percentage of their addressable market, as people who are already customers, what tends to happen is the percentage of your revenue in every given period of time becomes more and more from existing customers than from new customers, to the point that when you get to a giant retailer like Lululemon or Ann Taylor Loft, like in any given period of time, like 85% of your revenue comes from people who are already customers. So there's also a part of like the maturity phase of new D2C businesses that especially for those 8 and 9 figure brands, the reality is they have at this point millions of customers. And so the pool changes and the product roadmap changes and things like that. So there is a part of that is natural that I think that like, sure, we'd love to see a ton of new customer acquisition happening. But one, I like the idea of holding new customer acquisition constant and expanding your percentage of returning customer revenue over time. So 9% is like, cool. I don't mind that. Now, again, there can be ways that you bring revenue forward off that returning customer base that is challenging. So there's a lot in the puzzle that you have to just be careful of ensuring you're not, at the end of the day, what we're saying is don't spend money if it doesn't generate an incremental purchase. Now, who that incremental purchase comes from, there's probably a hierarchy of where you would want it to be, but an incremental returning customer purchase is still new revenue. That's not the same as firing your employee.
Fair. That matches up that larger brands are seeing, you know, higher percent of their growth, like way larger percent of their growth coming from repeat purchases than the smaller brands.
Yeah, Taylor, I think that's a really good point and something that I haven't really been thinking about as we're looking at this data, but you should over time have a higher percentage of your revenue coming from returning customers unless you have a brand that nobody really wants.
Yeah, totally. And so much of this is like, there's different business models where, again, the classic example, just because it is like, if you're selling Ridge wallets, it's very different. Every month you have to go get a bunch of new customers. If you're Missouri Quilt Co., almost all of your is like customers you already have, you're selling them more and more yarn over time. Like it's just different, right? Okay. So with that, one of the other big things that we've been trying to keep an eye on is how these big cultural moments impact purchasing. We know that these seasonal highlights or peaks tend to drive disproportionate value capture for our customers. So we want to give them insights into how these big consumer moments like Mother's Day and Father's Day are shaping up. So Jeremiah, what have we seen as we know that April represented the beginning of the period where we started marketing for Mother's Day? It's now 2 days away. Hopefully, Jeremiah, you've gotten some gifts. You know, we know you struggled with that in the past, but hopefully you've gotten ahead of it this year, given the data that you had access to. But what did we see about Mother's Day as we ended up wrapping up April?
Yeah, so this year's looking different than last year, which is interesting because Valentine's Day looked exactly the same, but we are not seeing the same trends this year from Mother's Day as we did last year. So in 2023, Mother's Day gifting really kicked off in mid-April in terms of the percentage of people buying gifts. So what we look at is the question of who is this purchase for? And we're looking at about 500,000 responses a month. In the context of that, then we look specifically at significant other as one of the recipients and a family member as a recipient. And so looking at those two things grouped together, last year we saw a big rise starting around April 20th and then really hitting peak about April 25th, 26th and kind of holding steady. It's interesting is this year we saw a steady rise from, and so the peak there was about 30% of purchases going towards the family member or significant other. This year though, we saw that rise start at around the same time, but it's been much slower. So it went from about 15% of purchases to about 20% that are going towards family members. So much lower than last year. So we'll have to see how that plays out for May. Is there a big jump in, you know, the first 2 weeks of May leading into Mother's Day? And did basically that delay just happen this year compared to last year? But what is really interesting is AOV is up significantly. So last year during that time frame, we actually saw a slight drop in AOV. So those kind of early Mother's Day purchases were actually a little bit lower than average compared to a normal baseline. And this year it's gone up significantly. So what it looks like is that people are maybe not buying as, maybe are not, the shopping maybe didn't start as early, or it has started, but they're just buying more expensive gifts potentially. So there's a little bit of, we just kind of like have to like wait and see how this plays out. But what's really interesting is we've seen some pretty massive increases in AOV. So the typical AOV is around $100, $110. We have seen significant other AOVs hit $100 for the week of April 29th, which is kind of wild. So that's, and that's a pretty good sample size. It's thousands of people that we're looking at there. So not sure why it's looking different year over year, but there definitely is some difference there. But yeah, we'll just have to kind of see. One more quick thing on Mother's Day. Last year, we saw the peak hit a week before. So basically the Sunday before is when it started to drop. So about a week before Mother's Day is when the gifting dropped down. And it still was at a fairly high level compared to average, and then started immediately ramping back up towards Father's Day.
Super interesting. Hopefully, all of you have taken our previous advice that there are still Mother's Day sales to be had all the way through Sunday. Get those digital coupons and things that you can show that it's on its way. You can manufacture a shipping delay. Maybe we could get a few brands to print out like, sorry, we delayed your shipment. It wasn't your spouse's fault. Emails or something signed up. But that demand should carry all the way through the final hours of the 12th. So those are the kinds of things we want you to take away from this. In terms of thinking about the actions, Steve, maybe as you're writing about this and thinking about this, what would you give people to do to think about this relationship between Meta and ASC and new customer revenue? What actions should they take in terms of thinking about how to look at their own data and see if maybe some of the things that you're seeing are coming to life in their individual store?
Yeah, I would certainly consider taking a look at your growth in new customer revenue with respect to the growth in Meta reported revenue. So if you're trying to, as you should be, use Meta to drive new customer growth, and Meta reported revenue, and we typically recommend using a 7-day click, 1-day view. If that is growing faster than your new customer revenue, then you're either grabbing organic customers that would have converted anyway, organic new customers, or you're probably grabbing returning customers. I would see that, take a look at that growth as well. So the chart that I'm using actually is Meta reported revenue versus new customer revenue. And that's kind of a really good signal to take a look at.
One of the things that we try and do with every customer is pull 1-day click, 7-day click, 1-day click, 1-day view, 7-day click, 1-day view reported revenue, and run a correlation between that and new customer revenue. And just to try and find for yourself the strongest relationship, if your goal is to create a relationship between those things, if what you want is to have Meta drive new customer revenue, then we should assess how well it's currently doing that. And the reason we use those is because at the end of the day, you have to pick an optimization setting. And those are the only four that you get to choose from. And so at some point, you have to make a selection. This is distinct from attribution. This is about optimization. You have to select which we'd like to optimize for. And so being conscious about why you made the choice that you made related to the business objective that you have. And maybe your business objective is bigger than new customer revenue, in which case, don't do that. Look at it against total revenue or whatever factor you're trying to create. But understanding that relationship is important, because I think in all these cases, and I'll even say this for PMax, is that I think there are ways in which you can bend and shape and merge the product into alignment with your business strategy in both cases. But it requires intention and thoughtfulness and clarity of what you want the product to do. And I think right now, the default settings might be at conflict with some of those goals. And that it's our job as marketers to understand all the features and benefits to be able to bend it to our will. Yarden, Jeremiah, anything else to leave us with as we reflect back on the month of April?
I did want to hear about consumer confidence. Do we have anything there? I actually this morning sat and read the government report. So I wanted to know if Steve had any thoughts there and how it correlates to the main one.
Yeah, I did not read that report this morning, unfortunately. But we kind of see the trend of the sentiment about the economy kind of dropped a little bit this month. We're still relatively high. It's still, I think, the fourth highest month we've had since we started the survey last March. We've been up but it did drop down. I think some of the numbers that we saw that were reported in April, the CPI rising, I think we talked about it on the last podcast, kind of because it just happened. That kind of negatively impacted consumers' view of the economy. And I thought that view of the economy actually jumped ahead of what we saw happening in the stock market. Like, we've seen a bigger drop in the sentiment about the economy than we did in the stocks. And they've kind of been correlated around 0.9% or 0.9 in as a Pearson correlation coefficient. So that might actually, there still might be more to happen with respect to that.
Yeah, and that maps. So the Michigan's consumer confidence fell further in May. They had initially a pretty high expectation, 76 on their scale, and it fell to 67. So it does feel like some of these, whether it's the inflation numbers or the lack of sort of obvious interest rate cuts and general sentiment is still choppy. I don't know that there's a lot of great indications that we have a super bullish narrative. But again, for us, that's showing up as 15 to 25% growth. So what we need to do is we need to make sure that our expectations are calibrated. That's the word I'm looking for, to an expectation that sits in that range. I think it continues to be possible and consistent with the data that we're seeing. But yeah, consumers are a little bit suspect right now.
Yeah. One thing that I just wanted to say too is, like, it's up. So like we saw a pretty good upward trend for about 6 months from, you know, last fall to the spring. And then now it feels fairly flat. And so it's not like it's going down, but it's also not going up. It's just, I feel like it fits.
So we're chopping along. Yeah.
And I would say my personal sentiment is like that too, right? Like I'm looking at stocks and like, do I want to invest in stocks? I don't think I do. Like there's nothing that feels great, but also nothing feels terrible right now.
Yeah. And maybe we need to like be okay with that. Maybe what we got to get ourselves to is like, you know what's nice? The sameness for a bit would be kind of be all right. I'm okay with it. No more hysteria.
Really? I'm personally, I'm waiting for a hit and start recovering. I don't like this in between phase. No one knows. It's been too long and too shaky.
Yeah. That's only because everybody logs into Veros when hell breaks loose. So that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps up this episode. And of course, go to d2cindex.com right now and sign up for the April issue. It is meaty and informative and full of lots of cool stuff. So please make sure at d2cindex.com you are signed up. And next Tuesday, we are going to be doing a Twitter Spaces live with Q&A. And as always, if you come to that, there's going to be a discount included for you to get the opportunity to sign up for that report. And all of the previous newsletters are now in the backlog in PDF form, available for you to download. We're going to continue to enrich that as well. So go right now, d2cindex.com, and sign up. Appreciate you tuning in. See you next time.